It's cold in here. We're good? We're on? Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. We do have a quorum present. Members, we're going to start. We have, I think we're going to work off this delete all amendment, which is the simplest procedure, which is the A2 amendment that everyone should have at their desk. And this includes, this has an Article 1, which includes the Clean Water Fund appropriations that were passed out of Senator Rummel's subcommittee earlier today. And then it also includes Article 2, which is the Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriations recommendations, which were passed out of Senator Saxhog's subcommittee on an earlier date. And it includes Article 3, which is should be the Parks recommendations passed out of subcommittee this morning. And then Article 4 is the general provisions that I am proposing as additions to the bill. And so what we'll do is have Senator Saxhog present the outdoor heritage recommendation portion. We'll have Senators Rummel and Torres Ray present the parks and waters portions. And then, and there's a couple of small amendments, I think, on these some of these sections, and then we'll talk about the bill as a whole. So if everyone is clear with the procedure, we'll start with Senator Saxhog. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As you said, we're dealing with Article 2 of the Delete All, and this is the Lasard, the recommendations of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council's first set of recommendations. This group was, as you know, set up shortly after November 4th, and they worked diligently to come up with some, what I think is some excellent recommendations. I would once again like to thank all members of the council. Many of are here, and Madam Chair, of course, we thank you as being a member of that council also. We think that these recommendations that you've come up with are an excellent start for future generations in the great outdoors as far as habitat goes. The leader of the LOHC was Dr. Mike Kilgore. He's the chair of the Lasard Council, and I'd like to have him make a couple of brief remarks on Article 2 of the recommendations.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Madam Chair, Mike Kilgore, have the privilege of chairing the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. In addition to Senator Anderson, who serves on the council, we have, as Senator Saxhog mentioned, other members of the council here. Just briefly introduce Jim Cox, who is the vice chair of the council in the back. Darby Nelson, who has moved, but he's here. Bob Schroeder, who has also moved, but he is here. So we have a number of council members present. Madam Chair and members, just very briefly, give you just about 2 minutes of background on process and what's in Article 2 of the bill. The council was established under 97A. We first met December 1st. By law, we were required to get our first set of recommendations to the legislature by April 1. We have done that. We spent a lot of time as a council reviewing existing conservation plans, reviewing conservation practices. The mission of the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which becomes the mission of the Outdoor Heritage Council, is to protect, enhance, and restore our prairies, wetlands, forests, fish, game, and wildlife habitats. So all of Article 2 focuses on those three activities of protection, enhancement, and restoration. In brief, we reviewed some 99 proposals totaling about $250 million in requests. What you see before you in Article 2 contains 18 program recommendations to do enhancement, restoration, and protection work of our forests, prairies, wetlands, and aquatic habitat systems. These projects will result in over 210,000 acres of land that's protected either by permanent conservation easement or by fee title acquisition. Roughly 11,000 acres of habitat will be enhanced and roughly an equal amount will be restored. We have greater than 300 miles of shoreline protected in these 18 projects. There is also a provision for a Small Grants Conservation Partners program, which we think is a very important part of our recommendations, which provides conservation funding for local habitat projects on a matching grant basis. Our recommended projects will leverage over 50 cents for every dollar of outdoor heritage fund that is being proposed here. The funding is dispersed throughout Minnesota. 77 counties at least will receive outdoor heritage funds with our recommendations. And with that, Madam Chair and members, and for the sake of brevity, I would stand to any questions that we have about specific projects in Article 2.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kildor. And I understand you have a very important engagement today, so we need to get you out of here. we really appreciate your work as chair of the council. I mean, obviously, all the citizen members of the council are doing this in addition to their day jobs or their other activities, as are the legislators. And it's been a really challenging process to get all of this work done in the limited time that we had available to us. So I think members are trying to remember, we've gone through this for several months now, and I believe we spent some time going through these recommendations. We certainly have in the Environment Policy Committee, as well as in Senator Saxhog's subcommittee. So I suppose there may be a couple of members here who have not heard this presentation. But let me just ask if there are any questions from the committee about Article 2 of the bill. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kilgore, I also want to say thank you for all the work that you've done and for all the time and effort that you put into this. This was very important to us, and it helped us really get to a place where, we have many, many groups coming together, building consensus. But I want to ask you specifically for my sentence or the statement that I should provide to my constituents in Minneapolis, and I'm going to ask as graciously as Senator Vickerman asked me this morning, how would I tell my constituents in Minneapolis that these recommendations actually benefit the city of Minneapolis? What would be your response when, as you know, a lot of the public in the city of Minneapolis, my constituents, are telling me that 91% of this money is not going to be used in the metropolitan area? And I intend to support this, but I still need to be able to respond to my constituents in Minneapolis.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres Ray, my response would be as follows. First of all, the recommendations do have funding going into all seven metropolitan area counties. I can't speak about the city of Minneapolis per se, so I can't say that the city would benefit. But I would tell you that the citizens of the city of Minneapolis will clearly benefit from the protection, enhancement, and restoration activities that are being proposed here. If whether they simply enjoy a greener landscape, whether it be around the metropolitan area or whether they travel to Rochester or Duluth or to western Minnesota, they will notice that. If they happen to pursue outdoor recreation activities, be it hunting, fishing, camping, these projects that we're recommending would certainly benefit them. That would be my response to you, Senator. And I would hope that that could be a response you could carry to your constituents.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Torres Ray.
Certainly, I do agree with you, Mr. Kilgore, and that has been my response. I am a senator that represents the city of Minneapolis here, but my responsibility is to make sure that we protect the environment and the planet. And that is the entire state of Minnesota as part of that planet, and we need to do this together. So I'm ready to support these recommendations, but I wanted to just let you know, that although I support this and I believe in this and I think this is the right direction, many of my constituents do ask the question in terms of, how we use the dollars and how they benefit the specific region. So thank you for your work.
And Senator Torres Ray, I have raised some of these issues as well as a member of the council, and tried to encourage members to look at some areas in the metropolitan area that perhaps they hadn't considered as having real habitat value. And I think we have put some, it is a small percent in terms of dollars, but there's some very significant projects in this package that will be funded in the metropolitan area that our constituents will allow them to have access to those outdoor opportunities you know, the Lake Rebecca is in western Hennepin County, and it's a prime muskie fishing lake, and we have a project here devoted to trying to improve that, the water quality and the fishery there. There's a number of specific projects that I think there's one in Cedar Creek area and mostly in Anoka County that is, you know, almost, I mean, not wilderness, but it's wild, and it's will have access for hunting and fishing and camping and canoeing. Well, maybe not camping, canoeing, and all kinds of outdoor activities. It's a very pristine piece of land that we're going to be acquiring with Habitat money. So there are some good examples in here, and I guess the other thing that has given me some comfort is to hear sort of the plans for the future. And we've talked a lot in the Parks Fund and the Waters Fund about the need for strategic long-term planning, about what's the statewide vision for these funds. And we have, you'll see, members, when we get to the Parks and Waters Funds, that we do have some plans in place to get to that broader vision of what we want the state to look like 25 years from now because of the infusion of this investment of dollars. And the Habitat portion of the funds is no different and intends to move forward with strategic planning. And I do have some language here at the end of the bill that says that I think that each of these funds needs to have a 25-year plan based on the based on science and based on the, you know, in the case of Habitat, based on the ecological regions of the state. And Dr. Kilgore has said many times that that's what he intends to guide the council to do over the next year. And so I think as we go forward with that process, it will allow us to focus, those of us, you know, we all have experiences in different parts of the state and different lands that we've had worked on and had experience with and recreated on, and this will allow all of us to look at the whole state. And I'm hopeful and confident that that strategic planning process will move all of these funds in a direction of focusing on the whole state, which is what I think is in the best interest of all of our constituents. So that's given me some comfort. Senator Rummel and Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Kilgore. I realize you have to move on, so I'm wondering if you would repeat your comments from the press conference we had earlier about the similarities between sure. Article 1 and Article 2.
Sure. I'd be happy to, Senator Rummel, Madam Chair. At the press conference, which focused on the Clean Water Fund, I was asked to compare the process and the outcomes to what we did as a Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, and I identified three things that I see as very strong parallels to both processes. First is our recommendations as a Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council and that of the Clean Water Fund is grounded in science. It's grounded in science, and it's grounded in the best management practices for water and for habitat and conservation that are based on science. The second thing, and it's been mentioned before, is we have an incredible conservation community in the state of Minnesota. And the work that we did as the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council and the work that you did, Senator, through the Clean Water Bill couldn't have been done without the many partners, public, private, and nonprofit, that helped us, helped you in developing that bill. And third is the long-term vision. You know, we have a 25-year mandate from the citizens to fund our outdoors, our parks and recreation, our clean water, and our arts. And so we're taking a long-term vision towards that, which is obviously quite unique. And I guess the fourth one, which I didn't mention, but in terms of your bill and the way it's laid out and the way our bill is laid out, which focuses on the constitutional amendment, protection, enhancement, restoration of our resources, of forests, prairies, wetlands, fish, game, and wildlife habitat. And your bill does similarly. It organizes your appropriations along the lines of the constitutional mission of the fund, which is very similar.
Thank you, Dr. Kilgore. We just wanted that on the record.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Bach.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if there's a general fund fiscal note on the amendment.
The amendment?
Yeah.
Well, we haven't gotten to the amendment yet, so.
On this article, is there?
Oh, on A2?
Yeah, is there a?
There is not.
Isn't there a, if we do land acquisition, isn't there a PILT cost to the state?
There certainly potentially is. Now, most of these land acquisitions are not, in most cases, the land itself is not identified yet. So I'm not sure if we know what that exact amount will be. I think there's some guesses. but I'm not sure if it's definite enough yet to be able to. I haven't seen a fiscal note. Is there a fiscal note on it? Yeah.
I thought I saw a number floating around that.
I've heard a number.
Somebody thought there was like $134,000 of potential PILT obligation from the general fund, and I don't know where it came from, but.
Yeah, we've heard that estimate probably from, I'm not sure from whom.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, that's correct. That would be a high-end estimate. It came from just the compilation of the projects that we're recommending and where there is a, for example, acquisition that would go into a state wildlife management area system that would be counted. But again, it's in the sense to get the information before you, we're not. There may be some acquisition-related costs that would not be PILT costs. PILT is based on estimated market value. So I would say a high-end would be $134,000. I think it, more realistically, it might be in the $120,000-some annual PILT cost, but there certainly is a cost around that, Senator Bach.
So, Madam Chair, do we have money in the committee's budget for that? Or?
Well, Senator Bach, when it comes to land acquisition, a lot of these deals take it's not clear exactly when they will occur. Presumably sometime in 2010, during the fiscal year 2010. And so the PILT obligation would accrue in, I don't know, 2011? I'm not sure. We haven't gotten a fiscal note. It's certainly something we'll have to think about in our budget moving forward. And we may have to do a supplemental budget on this next year. But I don't think it would accrue in 2010 is my guess.
Well, but Madam Chair, I do think it accrues in the biennium.
It certainly may.
Madam
Mr.
Chair, Senator Bach, not necessarily. I mean, because it's the previous year. The land has to, you pay PILT for land that was acquired prior. And so it's always a look back. There is some delay in PILT. It's not clear whether or not this would, fiscal year 2010, not likely, 2011, maybe, depending on when the acquisitions actually occur.
Madam Chair,
Senator
Knopf, there may not be a cost in this year's appropriations for PILT, but next year there likely would be one?
There may be, depending on when the acquisition would occur. And again, you know, the PILT is somewhat speculative. We generally, for land acquisitions, have not gotten a fiscal note on the PILT in the past. When the agencies have done fiscal notes, because of the speculative nature of when the acquisition is going to occur.
And it's true, when we passed bonding bills with potential land acquisition in them and LCCMR bills over the many years, this same question could arise, but I guess we haven't routinely done it as in that form of accounting, because you kind of wait and see what's actually bought, and then it's certainly something. I mean, this is an issue that we're going to have to discuss and consider going into the future.
Well, Madam Chair,
it's
an important issue to me. If it's $100,000, $120,000, whatever that number is, That is based on today's market value. As the market value of this land goes up over time, that number is going to go up. And it's an obligation the state would, under current law, the state's going to have to pay that permanently. And every year that this bill comes to us and we incur another obligation like that, we pile on another $100,000 or another $120,000. And, I mean, there's a real cost to the general fund in these additional land acquisitions that is permanent. And is every 6 years, I think, the market values are 5 or 6 years, the market values are adjusted for inflation, and that number goes up. And I think we have to have a discussion about that. I mean, especially considering, you know, the governor's most recent attitude towards payment in lieu of taxes. In the 2005 session, he tried to freeze the inflation so that the inflation in the PILT wouldn't happen when that adjustment came up. And this year he's proposing to fund it at 80%. And the law is what it is. There's an obligation to pay it out of the general fund here. And I'm very concerned about the commitment to that going forward. Many of you have heard me say, I have one county in my district that's 91% publicly owned. We can't continue to take land off the tax rolls and expect that they're going to have a school and they're going to have a hospital and they're going to provide police protection and emergency medical service to people that get hurt in the Boundary Waters when we're going to go from 91% to what? It was 90 when I got elected. Now it's 91. We're going to go to 92 and to 93. And what's going to be left? And if we don't follow through on our obligation to reimburse those local governments for that lost tax capacity, how do they fund local services when there's nothing left to tax? I mean, it's a serious problem in these counties that have a lot of public land, and I support public land. And those of us that live there, we benefit from them more than anybody else because it's available to us, you know, kind of out the back door on a daily basis. But at the same time, we pay the price on our local property taxes when more and more land is taken off of the tax rolls. So it's a difficult thing to manage. And I just want to raise it for everybody. It's an ongoing permanent cost when you make these acquisitions.
And Senator Bach, you're absolutely right. It's an important issue, and it certainly affects your district and some other districts much harder than others. And Senator Vickerman, I know, and Senator Fredrickson have said they'd like some more public land where they live. And I know some of us in the metropolitan area have said we'd like some more land protected from development where we live. And so perhaps this is good feedback for the council as they think about prioritizing habitat based on science, but also you can't buy every piece of land that science would tell you to buy. You still have to make priorities based on other factors. And I think we should look at other issues like, you know, where there's the urgency of development, where there's limited access to the public because there's not a lot of public land available and protected for access. I mean, those issues are certainly on the forefront of, as well as this whole issue of, you know, the property tax base and public services that are related to that. I mean, these are things that the legislature has to consider. I certainly agree with you, Senator Bach. Dr. Kilgore?
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, and just to reiterate, this is, too, a very serious concern of the council. We spent a lot of time in council meetings talking about PILT and the ongoing liability that provides. We have requested an opinion from the Attorney General's office about the use of the Outdoor Heritage Fund for PILT payments, and the information we got back is helpful. It's certainly not definitive. It depends on your interpretation. But it's continues to be an issue, not only, Senator, with you and others, but with the council. We plan to continue to look and work with you as the legislature to figure out how we can certainly include protection through acquisition as part of the Outdoor Heritage Fund, because as a council, we believe that's certainly what this, at least in the mix, what the citizens want, but at the same time making sure that we're able to fund those ongoing liabilities associated with acquisition.
You know, Madam Chair, we have a provision in this year's tax bill for the city of Taylor Falls in Senator Olsen's district, and he has a state park right on the perimeter of the city of Taylor Falls, and the city came to the tax committee and said, you know, we get PILT money for the state park, but it's not enough, and we have a lot of additional traffic in our community because of this state park, and that's a good thing for our businesses. But for our city, we have the cost of dealing with all of these tourists that come to our town. And they came in, and the tax committee gave the city an additional $30,000 in local government aid. But in the times of the governor's proposal to cut local government aid to cities and to counties by about 23%, it's not just the PILT issue, it's the other aids and credits that go to cities. We're putting a lot of stress on local governments, and I think we all need to remain sensitive to that.
Well, Senator Bach, I guess I have to then bring up the issue that I've brought up many times in this committee, that I represent a city that gets no PILT, zero, and it's 66% tax-exempt property, and that's the city of Falcon Heights. And, you know, they have a lot of tax-exempt publicly owned property, and as well as the State Fair and the University of Minnesota, and very, very small place to tap into a tax base. And so it's, the issue does go beyond land acquisition for natural resource purposes. It is a broader issue related to the ability of local governments to be able to provide basic public services. And so Yeah, it's not a simple question to resolve today.
I understand.
So thank you for raising it. It's very important. Senator Saxhog, would you like to discuss the A5 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I do have the A5 amendment, and what the A5 amendment does, among other things, is come up with an alternative to fee title, which is actually what we're talking here. Land purchased, of course, is taken off the tax rolls, and we come up with the idea of PILT, but conservation easements, and in this case, a body of law that we've been passing in the last couple of years called the Forest for the Future in the state of Minnesota, have a way here, and in fact, the SARD Council has recommended that 190,000 that there be negotiations for 190,000 acres of conservation easement in northern Minnesota. The public can get a copy of this map. Everybody on the committee has it. This outlined in red is the 190,000 acres, which could be in a conservation easement. Now, the new language in the A5 deals with the second year of appropriations for this land and easement, and it would require, among other things, $9 million in private funds, to be matched. An agreement on the easement with the Department of Natural Resources, which must be signed by August 15th of this year. And it also clarifies, although you didn't see it before, the Minnesota Forest for the Future program is under Minnesota Statute Section 84.66. So this project was initially, we thought that this was going to be take $50 to $60 million to accomplish, and the appraisals came in a little bit less, and along with the private donations, the second-year appropriation would only need to be $16 million. So the total cost with the private money involved would be $45 million. And I think we've talked about this for a long time. It's an opportunity in the form of an easement to keep 190,000 acres open to the public, in other words, accessible. It's wonderful wildlife habitat, and it would be managed by, in this case, one of the finest land and forest managers in the world, in UP and Kimmening. So, we think that this would be very beneficial to the state of Minnesota. And Dr. Kilgore, you might have a couple of comments, but I would like to move this particular amendment.
All right, Senator Saxhog moves the A2 amendment. Dr. Kilgore, anything you'd like to add?
Well, just Madam Chair and members, this is what we would consider a signature project of our first year of recommendations. This is, I believe, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We do not have many parcels, large blocks of private forest land that we have a willing seller willing to convey an easement perpetually, and the types of rights that would be acquired under this easement of the right to restrict, to prohibit development, to prohibit subdivision, to allow the public access for hunting and fishing and recreational opportunities, the commitment for the landowner to promote good stewardship through forest management. It's a working forest. These are the types of things that we think are just exactly what the amendment for the Outdoor Heritage Fund is to be used for. And our recommendation as a council all along was to fully fund this project. It was as we were developing our first year's recommendations, we didn't know what the terms of the agreement were between the state of Minnesota and UPM Kimmeny. Now that those terms have been disclosed, the council would certainly support an appropriation in the second year amendment to fully fund the deal. In fact, if you look, Madam Chair and members, on lines 25.25 and lines 25.26, it says this is the first of two planned appropriations for this program. So it was the council's intent from its initial appropriation to fully fund this project.
Okay. On the A5 amendment, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, maybe to council. Line 1.8 and 1.9 say acquire land or a permanent working forest easement. So from the discussion, it sounds like we're going to go down the road of a easement. We're not going to acquire the land. Is it, Council?
Yeah, I think there's a small portion that would be acquired. Senator.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, the easement, the perpetual easements would be 187,277 acres. There are roughly 1,300 acres of fee title that would go along with that, and I couldn't speak specifically to the location of those. We do have someone in the audience who is who's been working on behalf of the state who could provide more detail, but of the 187,000 is easements, 1,300 would be fee title acquisition.
And that is negotiated. I mean, that's that will not change.
Correct.
That has been agreed to as part of this deal.
That's correct.
But
Senator Bach.
My real question, Madam Chair, and to Council is the permanent working forest easement. What does permanent mean? So the state enters into some contract with UPM, and they agree whatever the conditions in the contractual document are. How does that, I guess I have a hard time believing anything's permanent. How someday, somewhere, 20 years, 50 years, 80 years from now, how does somebody someday undo that, or is there virtually no way for that ever to be undone?
Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair. We also have
Great, thank you.
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Senator
Knopf,
Bach.
Address the.
There is a provision in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 84C that does provide that these things are permanent. This is not, there are some, no expert on some of these land deals as far as, restrictions that are placed on a deed. Sometimes those can go away after time, but it does provide that a conservation easement is perpetual or is permanent unless otherwise stated, and it does not go away in the future. I mean, the future legislature, Madam Chair, Senator Bach, might be able to do something, but not necessarily, because this is considered a contractual relationship, and it is recorded as a conservation easement, not as a title restriction or something like that that some people have considered to be not quite as permanent as what we think is permanent. So these are permanent, and we've had the track record with the Board of Water and Soil Resources and easements, and it basically is a permanent restriction.
But, Madam Chair, my concern is that if somebody introduces a bill someday and says, notwithstanding Chapter 84C, can it then be sold? And is there any clawback provision that requires this money with its accumulated interest to be paid back to the state in the event that somebody, I would have to believe, can introduce that bill? And does it then trigger in law some kind of a clawback of the state money plus the interest? Is that automatic? Or?
Madam Chair, maybe Mr. Peterson could talk better on this. There are clawback provisions. When the legislature enacted 84.66 last year, it did provide specific provisions on how this works. And if my memory serves me correctly, there was a clawback provision in there, just the same as we do with the Bowser easements. We have a clawback provision. If they don't follow the terms of the easement, then the state can ask for damages and receive damages.
Mr. Peterson, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Madam Chair, Senator, all
could
of
you
our
identify easy- yourself to start, please?
I'm
introduce
sorry.
Introduce yourself. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Richard Peterson, and I am the Department of Natural Resources, Minnesota Forest for the Future Program Coordinator. Madam Chair, Senator Bach, all of our easements have provisions in them that identify this as a perpetual permanent conservation easements. And there are changes in the property that would require us to void the easement for whatever reason, the property is condemned for a highway project or part of the property is condemned, it does require that the owner compensate us fair value for any loss of value as a result of that condemnation, for example.
So, Madam Chair, some of this land is in a very scenic area of the state. So if the federal government came along and decided they wanted to create some research and natural area out of, they defined some boundary. And then this land was not eligible to be managed for forestry anymore because it fell within the boundary of this new research and natural area or scientific and natural area, wherever it was. And the action happened at the federal government level, and this land was inside that boundary. What recourse does the state have at that point?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I think you're talking about legal issues that are far beyond my expertise here. My understanding would be that this easement would stand that test, and that the federal government has no standing to condemn this property for a purpose that you've described. But again, I think that's a legal question that I'm certainly not a qualified legal expert in that field.
But you can, I mean, basically, if you have a contract, you know, the two parties can enforce it, and you can, if you break it, you owe damages. So it's really, or if some third party with a, you know, a higher power like the federal government were to break the contract, there would be damages that you could sue them. But for compensation. I don't know legally whether you could stop them or not, but there's always a remedy for breaking a contract in law.
Well, Madam Chair, I raise it because I'm very familiar with the issue. The federal government, when they created the boundary waters, locked up about over 90,000 acres of school trust fund land that in our Constitution says is supposed to generate revenue for schools. And the federal government took away the state's authority to manage that land for that purpose. And we really had no recourse. And I'm just wondering in the event, I mean, I've looked at a map of northern Minnesota, and north of Grand Rapids is a beautiful interconnected lakes region, much like the Boundary Waters. If you look at an aerial photo of it, it's quite incredible. It's like the area around Alexandria. And it would be someday a very nice management unit for wilderness. Who knows? I mean, when the existing Boundary Waters was created, they condemned 84 resorts and took them out. And they said, here's our price. I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. It just seems to me, I'm curious to know what the state's recourse is. I hope I'm not here to have to deal with it. But
Madam Chair, Senator Bach.
Senator Saxon.
And the whole, I don't want to get into this too deeply, but on the whole idea of the 90,000 acres embedded, of school trust land embedded in the Boundary Waters, I don't know that the state, I do know the state of Minnesota has not taken any action against the federal government, probably should.
Great. Well, good questions, but we don't really have all the answers today. So is there any further discussion on the A5 amendment? Right? Senator Saxhog renews his motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Let me point out, I don't know if members have any other specific questions about items in the bill. I want to point out that on page 32 of the A2 amendment is this subdivision related to cash advances, and this is something that the language is something the council recommended. I've discussed this with the finance chair, and I think there will be some issues in the finance committee about borrowing from the general fund if there's a deficiency in sales tax collected, and so I just wanted to alert the public and Dr. Kilgore and others. I'm on page 32.8 of the, and there's a section that allows borrowing from the general fund, at least for the first fiscal year, in the event that there's not enough sales tax collected. And I suspect this may not pass muster in the finance committee. So I just wanted to point that out, that there's been some concerns raised. But I think we can save that. There's discussions underway about this, so stay tuned on that. We'll have further discussions when we get to the Finance Committee, which would be our next stop. So the Finance Chair has raised some concerns about it. All right. Now, this language has been passed through subcommittee. Senator Saxhog is presenting it basically as a subcommittee report or recommendation, and now it's incorporated into this A2 amendment, which is an amendment to my bill. So I think we don't really need to vote until we get to the – I think we should have the report of the three subcommittees, and then we can vote on the whole amendment. That's probably the right procedure.
Yes.
Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, I've got one technical item in adding up the – I think it was a drafting issue when they put the numbers into the bill. On page 25, the total for wetlands, subdivision 4, should be $20,536,000. Doesn't affect anything in the bill. That's how much each project, when you add them up, what it costs. It doesn't affect the total of the bill, but it was just a
typo.
Typo.
So it's just a typo. Senator Saxhog, do you want to just – move to on
25. Madam Chair, I move that on 25.27, Article 2, that number be what? Changed to?
Madam Chair, Senator Saxhog, delete the $20,836,000 and insert $20,536,000.
So moved, Madam Chair.
On the motion, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Any further discussion on the habitat portion? Thank you so much.
Thank you for your presence
here, and thank you, Senator Saxon. Shall we go next to clean water? Senator Rummel?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm not too sure exactly how much detail you want me to go into. Do you want me to just do a general walkthrough of
Senator Rummel, about half of this group here has heard this presentation in detail earlier today. So I would say maybe a short version of the walkthrough would be great, and then we can take questions and discussion.
And I will do that then. Before I get started, one of the things that came up and that I've never mentioned is some of the criteria that we were using in making our judgments included that our process be transparent. And so we heard every single bill that was brought to us, and we heard it in public, that there be multiple impacts whenever possible on the particular strategies that were adopted, that as often as possible we would leverage dollars, we would involve citizens and local units of government, we would address the highest priorities first, address statewide needs, and include explicit outcomes and oversight and reporting. So I won't go through each word of the chapter one, but if you read every word, you'll find that those things occur often. Madam Chair and committee members, I organized the bill, as Dr. Kilgore's mentioned, based on the language of the constitutional amendment. And the constitutional amendments asked us to protect, enhance, and restore lakes, rivers, and streams. And so sections 3 and 4 are primarily devoted to those activities. There are allocations for planning, development and implementation grants addressing point source and non-point source pollution.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
What page is she on? I'm trying to follow. Where isn't it in this?
Are you on a certain page? Or are you?
I'm just reading a short summary that I prepared. So do you want me to go page by page?
No, that's okay.
If anyone would like us to go through page by page, we can certainly do that. Otherwise, I think Senator Rummel's giving more of a summary.
Madam Chair, my only concern is I want to be sure that agriculture is treated fairly in here, and I don't know just where it is. I think we moved it into your.
It's in here. Okay. Your recommendations are in here, but perhaps we should highlight what is in here from the Agriculture Committee.
And that's a very good point. You know, on the first page of. You can see the. Appropriations summarized by agency. So on page 1, lines 1.9 through 1.19, And I do believe agriculture is line 1.14.
Maybe we should ask, Mr. Knopf, I think, could point out, the, if you don't mind, the recommendations that came from the Ag Committee, if you have those at the top of your head, or Mr. Mueller, and how it compares with what's in here.
Well, Madam Chair, you might have Mr. Mueller compare with what's in here. The main ones I can point out, if you look on the non-point source, I don't think that there was anything in the Department of Ag specifically on the non-point source. But if you look, if you start on page 7, where we get into the assessment, monitoring, and TMDL development, you will see money in a couple of places. One is the subdivision 5, the pesticide monitoring and assessment on 9.8. You have the money for the Department of Ag for that purpose. It also does include, there was some a proposal from Senator Erickson Ropes on the Root River watershed, so it includes money for that. You also have on the TMDL, they're also involved in the TMDL development. You'll see on 10.23, the technical assistance to the Department of Ag. That was also in Senator Vickerman's bill earlier. And then you'll see on page 11, subdivision 7, you have the MDA assessment and protection, 11.25. That was in Senator Vickerman's bill. And then also in the research and tool development, the first subdivision 2 there, that was that's to the Department of Ag for research, evaluation, and effectiveness of monitoring. And then you'll also see on page 14 that there are some carve-outs, including the LEQA program that was in Senator Vickerman's bill. That was an amendment by Senator Chaudhry to put money in for the LEQA program. And you'll see that on page 14, paragraph C on line 14.9. So those are, in looking through the bill, those are the areas that Senator Vickerman had appropriations prior to going to the Finance Committee that were taken out. I don't think the numbers line up exactly, but the provisions are intact as far as there's money for each of the provisions that were in Senator Vickerman's bill.
Right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm not that concerned. I just want to be sure that we...
Yes. The recommendations from your committee, as well as from Senator Tomasoni's committee, there were recommendations on the PFA portion of the bill, and those are in here as well. And we may have adjusted some of the numbers a little bit to...
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, and we followed a lot of what the numbers were in Senator Fredrickson's bill and put it all together. Yeah, so it's very, very similar. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Section 5, as Mr. Knopf just mentioned, is the section that deals with assessment and monitoring of the quality of all waters. When we were looking at the constitutional amendment, we believed that there were three things that have to do with outcomes. So that's cleaning up the lakes, rivers, and streams. That's attending to the degradation of groundwater and to the protection of drinking water. But then there were three things that dealt with, there were activities that would make it possible to get those outcomes. And one of those was the assessment and monitoring the quality of all of our waters. And frankly, this is the heart and soul of the bill because for the first time, given the stability that we will have from the dedicated funds, we can put in place a 10-year plan that will go and assess the waters of the entire state, and we'll do it on a watershed basis. There are 81 major watersheds, so each watershed within 10 years will be assessed. Plans will be put in place to both keep the waters clean that are found to be clean, and plans at the same time will be put in place to address the impairment of any waters that are found. And this is kind of, this is both an efficiency thing, but it's also critical to the success of the program. There's no sense in holding some waters clean if you don't address the waters that have been impaired, because water moves. And when it moves from a clean place that's to another place that's not necessarily clean, you've defeated all the purpose of all that you have done. So that's what we believe is the heart. If you put sections 3, 4, and 5 together, that's the heart and soul of the bill. and it does occupy the majority of the funding. So in both in Section 3, maybe there are some demonstration or pilot projects that we have highlighted, Section 3 and 4. There's the St. Louis River and Duluth Harbor restoration. There's some riparian restoration along the Mississippi River. The Anoka Conservation District for the Metro Landscape Restoration. There's a provision to utilize the Minnesota Conservation Corps. And so there's some significant individual, we would call them demonstration projects, things that will help us understand what's working and what's not working. In Section 5, some of the demonstration items include the Red River, the River Watch in the Red River Valley. There's a St. Croix restoration if matching funds become available. Testing for endocrine disruptors, Root River research, and the Buffalo River pilot watershed restoration. Section 6 is a section that deals with the degradation of groundwater and the protection of drinking water resources. One of the things we found is that while we know a lot about surface water protection, we do not know quite as much. As a matter of fact, we don't have a lot of knowledge about our groundwater situation. And so the allocations in this portion of the bill place a greater emphasis on monitoring drinking water around the state. There are parts of the states where drinking water has not been monitored. And it also provides for the county geologic atlas. And I think we also list the geologic atlas somewhere else, but it really deals with the drinking water situation and the groundwater situation. Section 7 is education and public engagement, and that's critical to the success of this bill. The allocations include involving students in water assessments, such as the River Watch program, and participation of our local units of government and information for our local units of government. Healthy collaboration among the various stakeholder groups is critical to the success of this program. We have the Minnesota Conservation Corps falls under this task. The Water Ecology Model Curriculum, I think that was Senator Foley. Senator Foley brought us a bill that wanted to establish. There's nothing in the Minnesota education standards about science standards about water, and so they will develop a model curriculum, and hopefully in future years we'll be able to get that out to the public. We also include in this section the public website and the Star Lakes pilot project, and finally in Section 8, this is where Mr. Knapp put all the basic tools for research. And as Dr. Kilgore said, the decisions that we make need to be good decisions. That's what the public is counting on, and they need to be based on good science. So in this section, we have the LIDAR that will help us understand more about the way water flows on the surface. And as Mr. Knapp mentioned, the quality assurance program known as LEQA. There's a stormwater design standards that Senator Chaudhry brought us, and there's some livestock environmental dollars in here. So that's the overview in very short hand of this section of your bill.
Excellent. All right. Are there questions on the water portion of the bill?
Is there an amendment at the
table? There is an amendment that will bring, I don't know the number. What was that, Senator Vickerman?
I'm sure I got my problem solved.
Good. Very good. Very pretty easy to please. Okay. Thank you. The A8 amendment is coming. Yeah. They'll bring you a copy. Make sure you give her,
yeah. Yeah. Land on there, it was. Here's the ones we did.
I found a story. We have Chair Domi, I can explain.
Sure, as soon as everyone has a copy. Yeah.
How'd you get that in there?
Is there something in this bill? Is there something?
She's doing the chart. All right, go ahead. Mr. Knopf, we'll let Mr. Knopf go through this line by line.
Well, Madam Chair, you'll see a lot of number changes. They're basically, it takes $100,000 from the PFA TMDL grant program and applies it to the second year. This is from the second year money and applies it in the second year for the Star Lakes program. So the original bill had $100,000 only in the first year. This would have $100,000 in the first year and $100,000 in the second year. But it goes on to say that the second year grants are available only if the Board of Water and Soil Resources determines that the money granted in the first year furthered the water quality goals in the Star Lakes program in Minnesota Statute Section 103B701. So in other words, to verify that they're doing what they're supposed to do with the money, and then the second year money would become available.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Rummel.
Madam Chair, the reason that we made this adjustment is that Senator Olson, whose bill this belongs to, she made a very good case that in order to sell the lake associations on their improvements, that they needed some security that, you know, what they began in the first year would be able to be finished in the second year. And so because it's such a new program, we felt that it would be necessary to at least see some progress before we made that full commitment. So we are accommodating Senator Mary Olson on this one.
Senator Rummel, and that's exactly right. We had a conversation, and I think this is a good approach to making sure that we kind of put a carrot out there so that if they do a really great job and come up with some results, then they will have more funding available. But that they have to meet that test so that we can be, accountable for the money. So I think this is a good amendment. Does everyone understand the A8 amendment? Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries.
And then, Madam Chair, I think we discussed another change.
Senator Rummel, we talked about a change for the Minnesota Conservation Corps, and I think that ended up in an amendment that has a parks. Maybe we should just do that now, too, as long as we're talking about
the
it. That's okay.
Parks, right?
The money comes from this part, and the language affects parks, so we might as well just do it now. Thank you. So, Senator Rummel, as I understand it, this amendment will take right now the I'll look at page 2, line 31, to make sure I'm referring to the right piece. This would specify that some of the non-point source activity that Bowser is doing would be done with the by contracting with the Minnesota Conservation Corps. So we just designate some of the dollars out of that appropriation for that purpose, and that would be $500,000 a year rather than the $200,000 and $300,000, which didn't seem like quite enough.
Yes, Madam Chair. We discussed this earlier, and it just didn't make it into the bill because it's what we have done in the course of our bill and also the Parks bill is give more responsibility to the Minnesota Conservation Corps without giving them the dollars to do the work. And it was just an oversight. We had to discuss that this is what we should do, but
yes, we
missed it in the hurry that we are working under, the pressure we are working under.
That's correct. And the other section, the language sections, would just add language in the parks, under the state parks and the metro parks, to do the same, to ask those park systems to include the Minnesota Conservation Corps to consider that as they contract for the work that's done for restoration and trail building, et cetera, because it's been such a good, effective, cost-effective way to get the work done.
Mr. Mueller, did you want to say anything about the graphs? Or?
Maybe we should finish on the amendment first, Senator Rummel. Should we, on the A7 amendment, it's just moving the money within the existing appropriation. So is there any further discussion on the A7 amendment? Senator Rummel moves adoption of the A7 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Motion prevails. All right. Mr. Mueller?
Madam Chair, what was passed out was a pie chart that was passed out in Senator Rummel's subcommittee this morning. It basically just kind of groups the different areas of the clean water recommendations. The chart on the left shows percentages for each of the major categories in Senator Rummel's article. 29% for point source protection, 33.8% for non-point source protection, 25.1% for assessment monitoring and TMDL development, 5.1% for ground and drinking water protection, and the rest for education, engagement, and then research and tool development. And this, the chart on the right just shows the same totals but in dollar amounts and kind of brings them into more understandable categories. $95.1 million for protection, restoration, and preservation, $37.9 million for assessment, monitoring, and planning, $7.6 million for ground and drinking water, and $10.3 million for education, research, and tools. And the spreadsheet that was passed out basically, I won't go through the whole spreadsheet like we did this morning, but it details what's already in the bill. The numbers are loaded in. The spreadsheet also shows totals for the Outdoor Heritage Fund proposal. And then after we get through Senator Torres-Rey's bill, the Parks and Trails, then the last page of the spreadsheet shows a summary of all the initiatives by fund and then by agency, at least before the amendments. So, but I won't go through everything in the spreadsheet because it's been through. Well, unless anyone has any questions on what's in the spreadsheet, I'd be happy to answer that.
Senator Rummel, anything more?
That's as much as I have here.
One issue.
Okay, Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to bring up an issue that representative from the PFA mentioned today. In Senator Frederickson's bill and in other bills, I think, that were introduced on this side, in the for the point source protection, there was not allowance for carry forward of the money. And so we don't have anything in here that does that. But there was some concern in that they've used bonding money in the past, and the bonding money is basically available until spent. And what they were hoping for was to have a provision that said that it was available until spent. I just wanted to raise the issue. If somebody wants to do that, we'd have to add language to this to say that. I know in the, I think in the small community wastewater program, there's some in the language of the program, there's some reference in there that it would be continuously available, but there is no language in it that specifically says that. And they were requesting that. It would be an easy oral amendment to add a subdivision 6 that just said that appropriations, it'd be on page 7. If you added a subdivision 6 and do like we've done with these other ones, we just say appropriation conditions and then say the appropriations of this section are available until spent. That was a concern that was brought up to me. They didn't see the language in here, but again, it wasn't in the bills coming into this committee either. So,
Senator Frederickson?
Mr. Chairman, I would make that motion for that.
All right. Senator Rummel?
I would agree with that amendment.
All right. Sounds like a good idea. Any discussion? Hearing no more, no further discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. It's just that time of the day. I think we're getting hungry or tired. Hearing no more. Okay, whatever. I should point. We did have a good discussion about sort of what our overall goals of this are earlier today. That was really good, and so. When I wasn't so tired anyway, I won't try to repeat what I said then, probably a lot more articulately than I do now. I just want to mention one small thing, and that is that I think we mentioned this morning, that there was some interest in aquatic management areas that's been brought up by a number of people, and we did specifically make DNR funds eligible for that purpose for non-point source protection. Where is that? I just want to point that out. On page 2.
Lines 2.5.
Here we go. Yeah, subdivision 2 at the top of page 2, lines 2.5 to 2.11, includes a aquatic management areas. And so I think it's just really important for us to emphasize that this bill will focus on protecting waters that are not impaired, as well as cleaning up waters that are impaired, that those are both critically important functions under the Clean Water Legacy Act. They both are critically important pieces of the TMDL process, and they're both funded and supported strongly in this bill. I think both of those functions. So I just want to emphasize that both of those approaches are considered really important and are priorities based on these funding decisions today. Protection and cleanup are both important. So any other questions on the water section of the bill? All right. Thank you, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Let's go through the park section of the bill briefly. And I think, Senator Torres Ray, do you want to offer that kind of technical amendment on the Metro Park section? I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that, the A6 amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to offer that amendment. And members, Madam Chair, that particular amendment is for a portion of the bill that is pretty technical. It's about the funding formula that was recommended by the Metropolitan Council for the Metropolitan Parks. And unfortunately, we made a couple of mistakes in there. I don't know how it happened, but fortunately or luckily they were here this morning paying attention. So they pointed out to us, and we work with the staff to correct that. So the A6 amendment intends to correct those errors that are in that portion of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Torres Ray. In particular, line 5 of the amendment, the language that refers to Metro Parks should not refer to state parks, but rather should refer to the regional parks. So that correction is just a mistake. So I don't know if everyone's had a chance to look at the amendment. Are there any questions, any discussion on the A6 amendment? Hearing none, Senator Torres Ray moves adoption of the A6 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As many of you know, we went through this morning, so I'm going to repeat just a few things related to the bill and of importance, and I'm going to try to walk through it really fast. But members, you need to know, those members that were not in the subcommittee, that the recommendations that are included in Article 3 for parks and trails are really based on a brief term that we had to discuss the issues related to parks and trails. And what we learned through this process is that unlike the Water Committee and unlike the Habitat Committee, we really did not have an opportunity to engage the public and engage multiple members throughout a period of time to really work on this, because we had a very limited time. So what you're going to see in this bill is that we are presenting a recommendation for one-time funding that will be allocated just for the biennium. And the intent here, Madam Chair and members, is that we will work during the interim to really look at a long-term plan for parks and trails that will be a statewide plan. And so at this point, we really don't have a state plan or framework for parks and trails in the state of Minnesota. What we know is that DNR, the Metropolitan Council, local entities such as the counties and the cities develop their own plans and strategies and priorities, and then they work with local funding and state funding to fund those priorities. What we would like to see in the future is that we work together and develop a framework that will be a statewide framework. So at this point, Madam Chair, what the subcommittee would like to do is submit a recommendation for one-time appropriation. And as you can see in page 41, the appropriation is section 2 to the Department of Natural Resources, $16.5 million for 2010 and $19.8 million for 2011. And then we describe some priorities in page 41 and page 42. And we move on into the appropriation for the Metropolitan Council, $13 million for the first year and $15.5 for the second. In this one, Madam Chair, the formula that we just talked about is described in Section 5 of page 43. So the formula that was recommended by the Metropolitan Region is described in statute per their recommendation. So this is not a formula that we created for them. This was their recommendation. In here, we have a recommendation for $400,000 that will be given to the University of Minnesota for the Center for Changing Landscapes to create a comprehensive statewide parks and trails framework and system inventory. And the hope, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is that we will be able to use this framework to create a statewide plan for parks and trails. And we will be reviewing that in 2010. In Section 6, which is page 44, I want to point out, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that we attempted to really provide a definition for parks and trails of regional and statewide significance, but what we decided to do was really talk about including here some priorities that people really talk about related to trails. I think that we did not have the time to engage the public into this conversation about regional and statewide significance for parks, but clearly people talk about trail projects that provide connectivity, trail projects that provide enhanced opportunities for commuters, and trail projects that provide safety. And those were common themes that we thought we could include for now, and they represent consensus to some extent. And then in page 45 in subdivision 1, we have more concrete language for the framework development for the University of Minnesota. So the university and the center, concretely the Center for Changing Landscapes, is directed to create this long-range 25-year framework, which, Madam Chair, will be incorporated into the framework that is going to be developed for all areas within the legacy fund. And, Madam Chair and members, that's basically what this Article 3 is about.
Thank you very much, Senator Torres-Ray. Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, just heard some concerns from different people today that maybe the $400,000, I'm all for the $400,000. But they said, well, I think they could do it less than that. I'd say up to, but that doesn't do any good. So I guess what I want to know, I want them to at least report back to you where they're going. And I don't see that in here. Maybe it is. Yeah. We should know what they're doing for the
library. 45.25.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, it is on page 45, subdivision 2, that's 4525. It says that the Center for Changing Landscapes shall submit the framework in a report to the chairs and ranking minority members and so on by October 2010. So they need to report back to us.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, I'm familiar with the work that this entity at the University of Minnesota has done all the way from the North Shore down to southern Minnesota, and I've seen the detail and the diligence they put into and the time and effort. I don't think this is too much money at all for what we're charging them to do. They will earn every dollar of that.
Senator Fredrickson, I agree with you, and I think we're not only asking them to do this framework that will connect everything, but to make it user-friendly and accessible to people by making sure that it can be put on the web and people can have access to this information about how all our parks and trails across the state connect. And so I think it's a reasonable price as well for a
Madam
really
Chair,
important.
I'm not against $400,000 because I was there when we put the $400,000 in here. I'm
appreciate
just telling
it.
You what I heard from some anybody. Can I say they say we get paid too much, and you know we don't. I hear those noises no matter where you're at.
Senator Torres-Ray.
But I want a good plan, not just something that I would throw together that you probably couldn't read anyway. a little bit of homework in this thing.
Well, thank you. And I think if we all feel, you know, if we feel strongly about that as a division, then that will say a lot to our colleagues and to the public that we think this is important. Very good. All right. Well, if there's no other questions on the parks portion, thank you, Senator Torres Ray. I would like to discuss Article 4 of the bill, which is three small items that we've had a little bit of discussion about in the Clean Water Subcommittee. These are three pieces that I thought were important to be sort of general guidance for the whole bill, the whole package of outdoor legacy funds, one being a single website that the public would be able to access to, so that they could find out how their dollars are being spent, how these legacy dollars that they voted for are being spent with one click of the internet. And this was discussed in Senator Betzold's division as well, because this allocation would go to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. And they recommended kind of expansion of this idea and a lot more money in 2 years. And we decided to instead scale it downward, because we don't want to be guilty of spending money from these funds for frivolous purposes. We want it to be only what's absolutely essential that isn't actually put on the water, put on the land, and put in the park. So I know Mr. Hubinger had suggested it would cost more than this, but we're at this point, we're just recommending $50,000 for the website for the first year, and hoping that they can find a way to scale it down and make it as simple as possible. A lot of us in discussions didn't think it needed to have more than a full-time person to put a website together, especially given that the Lessard Council has its own website, and we're asking that they just provide a link to the information so that the public, again, has a one place to go, one portal for this information about where their dollars are spent and the plans that are in place to guide the expenditure, so people know what the direction is and what they're getting for their money. And so we're recommending $50,000 to be divided between the Outdoor Heritage Fund would only have to contribute $10,000 because they already have a website, and the others would be proportionately divided with the waters and the parks. Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, you just answered my question. I was curious why there was only $10,000 from the Outdoor Heritage and $25,000 from Clean Water, but the Outdoor Heritage just already has their, and this is for a link.
Yes, exactly. And so we're not exactly sure what will be put on this website. Perhaps there will be more, some information that's required that's not on the Lessard Council website, but just in recognition of the fact we don't want to duplicate what they're already doing. We just want to make it easy and accessible and transparent for the public, and that's the purpose of this. And that, as we talked about before, I'm taking this out of that reserve fund at the bottom line, which is a $25 million, 10% reserve for all three of these funds, and we're taking $50,000 from that fund to make sure that this website is available for the public. So it won't affect any of the recommendations or allocations for any of the funds. The second piece of my little three-part recommendation is signage. And we've also had a lot of conversation about how, and we have in the Lessard Council as well, about the importance of having signs that tell the public that this is a project funded by the legacy amendment dollars, so that people know, again, very visibly, how that money is being put to use. And I think it would be really fun to do this through a competition rather than having the DNR or somebody hire a consultant to put together some kind of a graphic design. Instead, I think we should do a public contest for a design, for a logo. And that would engage the public in this process in a way that they were engaged during the process of passage of the amendment. So that's the proposal that's described in here in Section 2 under signs. And then thirdly, a 25-year strategic plan. And this, I think, is designed to be written in a way that's rather broad and doesn't tie the hands of anyone too greatly, but just indicates that I think for each of these funds, there needs to be a 25-year plan in place for where it's going and what outcomes we expect from these dollars. So, again, so the public knows the money is being put to good use and so that we can hold ourselves and those who are spending the dollars accountable for the expenditures. And so the plan for each fund has to be adopted by whomever is responsible, whether it would be the Lessard Council, the Clean Water Council, or the Clean Water Committees, the Parks Fund Committees, all need to do the same thing. They need to put together a 25-year plan showing the outcomes for meeting the constitutional requirements, restoring, protecting, enhancing wetlands, prairies, et cetera, and the other parts of the constitutional language. The links are these plans need to be on this website for the public, and the plans, the habitat plans need to be based on the ecological sections of the state. The water plan needs to be based on the watersheds and aquifers of the state. And all the plans need to be based on science and et cetera. So that's the basic language. I ask that we achieve benefits in different of these sections, and that you can prioritize expenditures based on science and urgency. I wanted to propose one small language change here on page 47, line 32. The Parks and Trails Council has asked us to insert the word supporting before parks. So that would be on line 32 after and, insert supporting. So that would reflect the language of the Constitution.
Madam Chair, I'll move that for you.
Thank you, Senator Fredrickson. Any discussion on that oral amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Okay, that's it. That would be the whole bill, and I hope everyone likes it. Senator Rummel.
Oh, what time is it?
Wow. And the total amount on the spreadsheet is for $301 million. $301,372,000 for 2 years. So that's a lot of money. That's going to do a lot of good.
5 years ago, that would have been a dream.
It really is a dream come true, I think, to be able to say we're gonna invest in our outdoors. Senator Rummel, and then Senator Vickerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am just curious, as you're talking about this 25-year plan, there's no appropriation for that. That's something that's the work of the committee.
Well, Senator Rummel, for the water and the parks, as of now, those are projects of legislative committees. And so those would be we're requiring ourselves to adopt plans, which is a little unusual, but I think it's appropriate, given that this needs to be a discussion that goes beyond our normal budgeting process. And we're asking the Lessard Council to adopt a plan, and they're already planning to do that, and they're going through that strategic planning process starting this summer. And in the parks and waters, we already have, as part of our appropriations recommendations, some of the foundational research that will be needed to help us put those plans together. So I think that's what we should do as committees, is to put those plans together, and as a legislature.
Just clarifying.
Senator Vickerman?
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to personally thank the two senators for their hard work, and you, and especially your staff. I know how hard I just get to go home, and you have to sit here and work and work and work, get this done. So, would it be all right if we applaud your staff? Can we do that?
Let us thank the staff for all of their work.
Yes.
And Mr. Senator Vickerman, I really appreciate that you said that, and I have to remind members and the public and the staff, this is our third budget bill we passed out of this division. Most committees are still on one budget. So we've had a lot of work to do this session, and I think we've really accomplished a tremendous amount in a short period of time, and it's due to everybody's incredible efforts. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, and if somebody else wanted to move the bill, I would move the Senate file 2106 as amended.
I think we have to adopt the A2 amendment. So Senator Fredrickson moves adoption of the A2 amendment to Senate file 2106.
As amended.
On that motion, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I would then move that Senate file 2106 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee.
Senator Fredrickson, thank you for moving that. And I just need to ask if anybody has a burning desire to speak to this. It's not required. All right. Thank you so much. And Senator Frederickson, as the original Clean Water Legacy author, I really appreciate your moving this bill and your leadership on this. So on the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all. The committee's adjourned.
Okay.
Yay.
Get to go home.